In 1990, a blue hedgehog with attitude sparked a corporate battle that would transform entertainment forever. When Tom Kalinske took the helm at Sega of America, Nintendo controlled a staggering 90% of the video game market. Their mascot Mario was more recognizable to American children than Mickey Mouse, and the word Nintendo had become synonymous with video games themselves. Kalinske, fresh from revitalizing Mattel's Barbie line, was recruited by Sega's enigmatic Japanese president Hayao Nakayama during a family vacation in Hawaii. Initially reluctant, Kalinske was swayed by his five-year-old daughter's encouragement and the impressive technology Sega had developed, particularly the 16-bit Genesis console that technically outperformed Nintendo's aging 8-bit system. The problem wasn't Sega's technology, but their approach. They were trying to beat Nintendo at their own game, rather than carving a unique identity. Kalinske developed his revolutionary four-point plan. Bundle Sonic the Hedgehog with the Genesis instead of selling it separately. Slash the console's price from $189 to $149. Create edgy marketing targeting teenagers instead of children, and develop games specifically for American audiences. When he presented this plan to Sega's Japanese board, they were horrified, until Nakayama silenced the room. "Everyone in here thinks you are nuts, but this is why I hired you. You may go ahead with the plan." Nintendo of America began in 1980 in a tiny Manhattan office under Minoru Arakawa. Their fortunes changed with Donkey Kong, a quirky game featuring a mustachioed plumber created by Shigeru Miyamoto. After the 1983 video game market crash, Nintendo cleverly positioned their Nintendo Entertainment System as a toy rather than a video game, using Rob, Robotic Operating Buddy, as camouflage. Once established, Nintendo implemented unprecedented control. Their seal of quality gained consumer trust, while licensing agreements restricted third-party developers to 5 games yearly. Security chips prevented unauthorized games. Their executive team was formidable. Howard Lincoln, their legal mastermind, Peter Main, the marketing strategist, and Howard Phillips, the game master, who became Nintendo's face through Nintendo Power magazine. By 1990, Nintendo had sold nearly 30 million consoles, controlled 90% of the $5 billion video game industry, and created a phenomenon where their characters appeared on everything from cereals to bedsheets, establishing not just market dominance, but cultural hegemony. Sega's Mario Killer began as Mr. Needle Mouse, a teal hedgehog with red shoes created by artist Naoto Oshima and programmer Yuji Maka. Despite former CEO Michael Katz dismissing it as the stupidest thing I've ever seen, Kalinske and product manager Madeline Schroeder recognized the character's potential, even with its initial fangs, spiked collar, and electric guitar. The team studied successful character designs from Mickey Mouse to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, creating a character Bible with an American backstory. This process sparked tension between Sega of America and Sega of Japan, with Schroeder defending the American vision to Japanese executives despite cultural and gender barriers. Sonic perfectly embodied Sega's identity as Nintendo's rebellious alternative. While Mario moved methodically with a friendly smile, Sonic tapped his foot impatiently, rolled his eyes, and blazed through levels at unprecedented speeds, a personality contrast that became central to positioning the Genesis as the console for sophisticated gamers who had outgrown Nintendo's family-friendly image. With Sonic developed and Kalinske's four-point plan approved, Sega launched their 16 weeks of summer in 1991, their critical window to establish market position before Nintendo's Super NES launch. Despite having less than Nintendo's quarterly marketing budget for their entire year, Sega targeted older gamers and dominated radio, a medium Nintendo ignored. They partnered with stations like KISFM for beach and concert promotions, which unexpectedly led to a partnership with Blockbuster Video, who was in litigation with Nintendo over game rentals. Sega's masterstroke was bundling Sonic with the Genesis. This created a challenge. 250,000 altered Beast systems sat unsold. Sega physically opened 150,000 boxes and repackaged the consoles with Sonic. As the Blue Hedgehog appeared in stores, word spread through schoolyards and college campuses, quadrupling Genesis sales. Sega also created direct comparative advertising. Using a clever strategy to bypass Japanese executives' approval, they produced commercials challenging Nintendo. Their The Salesman ad showed a pushy retailer trying to sell a Super Nintendo while the customer noticed the Genesis's advantages. By the time Nintendo launched the Super NES in August 1991, Sega had created significant momentum that would challenge Nintendo's dominance for the first time. If Sonic represented Sega's creative breakthrough, Mortal Kombat became their commercial watershed moment. When Acclaim's ultra-violent fighting game arrived in 1993, Nintendo censored it, replacing blood with gray sweat and removing graphic fatalities. Sega instead implemented a blood code that unlocked the arcade authentic gore, maintaining their rating system while offering what Nintendo wouldn't. The results were decisive. Sega's version outsold Nintendo's by nearly 4-1. For many teenagers, this crystallized the difference. Nintendo treated them like children, while Sega respected their choices. The success proved the gaming market had matured beyond family entertainment. This victory had consequences. Senator Joseph Lieberman held congressional hearings on video game violence in December 1993, featuring dramatic footage that generated sensational media coverage. Despite the public relations challenge, the hearings ultimately benefited the industry by creating the Entertainment Software Rating Board, establishing the standardized rating system still used today. While battling Nintendo externally, Sega faced internal struggles that would prove fatal. Kalinske pursued two game-changing alliances, with Sony after their Nintendo partnership collapsed, and with Silicon Graphics, whose real-time 3D technology promised significant advantages. Despite promising negotiations, both partnerships were rejected by Sega of Japan's engineers. In a twist of corporate irony, Kalinske referred SGI founder Jim Clark to Nintendo, resulting in the Nintendo 64, while Sony independently developed the PlayStation. These missed opportunities revealed a fundamental disconnect between Sega's American and Japanese divisions. By 1994, Sega had achieved the seemingly impossible by capturing over 50% of the 16-bit console market. Yet within 2 years, they squandered this advantage through fragmented hardware strategies like the Sega CD and 32X add-ons, and through escalating tensions between their regional divisions. The final blow came at the inaugural E3 convention in 1995. After Kalinske announced Saturn's $399 price, Sony's Steve Race delivered a devastating six-word speech, $299, undercutting Saturn by $100. The Saturn flopped, and Kalinske resigned in 1996. The Sega-Nintendo battle transformed gaming from children's entertainment to a medium targeting teens and college students. The passionate platform loyalties we see today began with children declaring themselves Sega kids or Nintendo kids in the early 90s. The console wars revealed how corporate culture shapes destiny. Nintendo's adherence to core principles, quality over quantity, careful planning over rapid expansion, ultimately proved more sustainable than Sega's fractured identity despite initial disadvantages. Sonic and Mario weren't just mascots but avatars in a battle that defined entertainment for generations. Though Sonic eventually faded while Mario endured, their rivalry created the modern gaming landscape where games have evolved from toys into the world's most influential entertainment medium.